This is ACC CardiaCast, a series on the latest clinical education brought to you by the American College of Cardiology.
All right, so the future of syncope systems of care. We'll start off with an ARS question. So looking around the audience, which best describes your experience with a syncope clinic? A, my practice has a syncope clinic. B, I know of a local syncope clinic where I can refer patients to. Or C, what is a syncope clinic? Please enter your answer. Ah, okay. Well, let's explore this a little bit. So it looks like most of our audience has answered C. What is a syncope clinic? Well, funny you should ask. 2004, the European guidelines first suggested the use of a syncope clinic. So back then, there was a great variation in practice and diagnosis for syncope. There was, syncope was number 6 on the reason for admissions for patients over 65. And in terms of cost, 74% of the cost of diagnosing and treating syncope was related to the hospitalization itself. So back then, the European guidelines began to initiate the concept of structuring a syncope clinic. So on to our next question, true or false? The 2017 ACC, AHA, HRS, and the 2018 European syncope guidelines both advocate for and offer discrete recommendations for syncope units. True or false? Okay, all right. So you would think true, and where we currently stand is after 2004 and the 2009 European guidelines, the updates included even a broader explanation of syncope clinics, providing a structure and a pattern care pathway. In the U.S. and the ACC-HA guidelines, however, although the syncope clinic is suggested, is recommended, a formal recommendation is not made because there's not yet enough data out there to support a recommendation. So yes, very, very, very evident in the European guidelines and just subtly suggested in the European and the U.S. guidelines as of this time. So there's more data needed. Oops, I'm sorry. Syncope units uniformly lead to increased revenue for hospital systems, true or false? Okay. And Dr. Goldberg will shed a little more light on this. So what is a syncope unit? It's a facility, usually an outpatient clinic, dedicated to diagnosis and management of syncope and related symptoms, with dedicated staff and access to appropriate diagnostics and therapies. It uses standardized protocols, guideline-based therapies, and it treats patients with syncope, and they'll receive their therapy under the care of a syncope unit, plus minus additional expertise as required. And the most important thing, as already stated, is risk stratification. So appropriate and early risk stratification is going to lead to appropriate diagnosis, therapy, and follow-up. As already suggested in the 2017 guidelines, we see that the most important piece is the initial evaluation, the class one recommendation for the evaluation, the extensive history and physical, and an EKG. And then going on to determine their risk. So yes, for patients who are high risk, admission into a facility is definitely recommended. And we can see that. That's already been explained. So these patients are hemodynamically stable or at risk for rapid decompensation. So yes, these patients should definitely be admitted. But what about patients who are not high risk? So for patients who are not high risk and do not need to be admitted to a facility or a hospital, then what do? And it's now a class 2A, 2B indicator to work them up as an outpatient. But what does that mean? So you're in the ED, you've got a patient who has had some sort of syncopal episode. They're probably very scared. Their families are probably very scared. And then what do? And the knee jerk is often to admit the patient and figure it out, especially if they're 90. right? But now with things such as the syncope unit, we can look at treating these patients and working them in the outpatient setting. And oftentimes, just knowing that alone, knowing that your patient can be seen within 24 hours outside of the hospital is gonna help to allay their fears. It's gonna do well with the referring, with the primary care, who will still be involved in the care and decision-making of that patient. And it's gonna help with the patient alleviate their anxiety. So similar to the 2017 guidelines, the European guidelines also lay out the risk stratification of high versus low risk. And then in 2015, put forward an EHRA position paper talking about the syncope unit, rationale and requirement. And it looks at exactly how to set one up. So looking at the organizational aspects, what is a syncope unit, how do you set one up, who do you need, what do you perform, and what are the benefits of having one? So syncope units consist of a multidisciplinary team. Most often it includes advanced practice providers, a cardiologist, neurologist, geriatrician, nurse, technician. And this varies from site to site, much like many other teams. We see this a lot in transplant teams, TAVR teams, heart teams. Much of it is dependent upon your resource, the resource availability. But oftentimes, you would have likely a clinical nurse specialist or an advanced practice provider working in conjunction with a cardiologist. So the syncope clinic might be a subset of a cardiology clinic, plus minus a neurologist who may rotate through, that might be a shared multidisciplinary clinic, or on-site versus virtual team. So it might be a situation where the patients are seen by an advanced practice provider, also with a cardiologist, but also having access to a multidisciplinary team on a broader scale for decision making. Okay. Now, in looking at a study done in Italy, the recommendation is that you could anticipate 163 patients per 100,000 inhabitants, okay, with an average of 2.9 tests per patient and a minimum of one follow-up visit. And again, in the clinic, we can do a lot. So you can get a lot of testing done, and much of this can be done on-site. So yes, there are many sites that have syncope clinics that are able to offer a 12-lead EKG and interpretation. They may be able to offer blood testing. They may be able to offer tilt tests, perhaps an echo on-site. But most importantly, what they can offer is expert history-taking. So the most important piece of diagnosing syncope is getting a very thorough history and to elicit the symptoms to come up with an efficient and effective diagnosis. So in the syncope clinic, many of these functions can be performed by physician or advanced practice provider and staff. Now, the clinical nurse specialist not only would function within the clinic itself, but would also work to manage the system, to manage the program, to coordinate with other facilities or other departments to, say, have blocked echo time, or to expedite an EP study, or to expedite a neuro consult, that sort of thing. And also to work within them to say, hey, can physical therapy come here? Can we get urgent visits to various other specialties, perhaps psych? Okay. And this unit should ideally be worked with by a syncope specialist. So this would be a physician who specializes in all possible forms, all of the major forms of syncope, including the mimics, to best achieve a proper diagnosis. Along with the clinical nurse specialist would be the role of working with metrics, collecting data, providing this data that we use to perhaps suggest in the U.S. guidelines moving forward whether or not a syncope clinic should be included. So how can we tell that we have an effective, functioning, and actually good syncope clinic? So these are the quality metrics developed by the EHRA task force. So in a functional syncope clinic, greater than 70% of the patients should receive a definitive diagnosis. Greater than 20% of the patients who have an unexplained diagnosis in the ED should be fast-tracked to the syncope unit. There should be a greater than 20% reduction in cost, and a less than 5% readmission rate after diagnosis and treatment. And it's suggested to see at least 100 new patients a year to maintain efficiency and competency, and to have a dedicated staff with ongoing training. And with that, I'll turn this over to Dr. Goldberger.
That was a fantastic overview. Thank you, Kim. So just the background on this. So prior to the elaboration of these syncope units in the EHRA statement in 2015, there was some work done here, and I show this paper only in the sense that, you know, it's called a blackouts triage clinic, and this is in the UK. But what amazes me about this paper is that if you look at the author list, while there are several authors, it just speaks to the multidisciplinary aspect of this clinic. They have a research fellow, an arrhythmia nurse, a specialist falls nurse, an epilepsy nurse, a consultant neurologist, a general practitioner with interest in epilepsy, an EP doctor, an ED doctor. So again, this is like sort of like the syncope dream team here to set up this clinic in Europe, which actually had very good outcomes. But even more work was done later on, looking at in the SEED study, which was done by Wen Shen, who was the chair of our guideline, and the syncope evaluation in the ED department, basically looking at this idea of having a set, sort of an offshoot of the ED where patients would present, asking the question is, as you have that unit in the ED, does it improve diagnostic yield and reduce hospital admissions? So this was not sort of an offshoot where you get patients referred to. Patients would come in, they'd be randomized to syncope unit or standard of care, about 100 of them. They were all intermediate risks. So thinking back to the slides that Frank showed, they're not necessarily a high risk that needs to be admitted or low risk, for instance, but you know, you can go either way. The median is about 64, and many of them had abnormal ECGs. And they immediately found that there was no difference in mortality, survival free from recurrent syncope, or survival free from the combined endpoint of mortality and recurrent syncope. And overall, they found that patients who actually were admitted to this clinic, the rate of admission, as you would expect, would be much higher than those at standard care, but the diagnostic yield that was found was much higher in those that came to the syncope clinic, 67% versus about 33. Ben Sun, another member of our writing committee, looked at a similar study in the ED, about 124 patients. He specifically found lower index hospital costs, a much lower inpatient admission rate, a much shorter length of stay, and the outcomes. Everyone always wonders, if you send somebody away or don't admit them, are they going to do worse? That's what people are thinking about in the ED. He found that the outcome rates after the hospital discharge were similar, and there was no difference in 30-day quality of life scores or patient satisfaction. Patients don't mind being sent home. The Fain and Paul Clinic was established at Utah back in 2011, and it was actually designed to set it up, and they actually asked two questions in review. They asked, what are the short-term risks of patients presenting to the ED syncope in the short term, and how do guideline-based admission criteria compare with clinical practice? This is the crux of syncope units. You risk stratify them to that unit. You use guidelines to help manage them. This is all very standardized. It limits heterogeneity. They looked at this in a very laborious chart review. They actually found that patients with syncope, 118 patients were admitted and 136 were discharged. Then looking at guideline-based criteria, they asked the question, well, who really needed to be admitted and who didn't? They found that actually, of those 118 patients that were admitted, 57 of them arguably could have been sent to an observation unit, and then 61 could have been admitted. So that's actually quite striking. There's actually at least half of them arguably didn't need to be admitted. And again, this is chart review, so it's hard to know what you're facing at the front lines, but by guideline criteria, many of those patients that were admitted were low risk, if not more. And now, again, over those 118 admissions, 57% could have been admitted by the algorithm going to a syncope unit. 52% reduction in admission rates without a significant decrease in events. And looking at the discharge group, this is the second part of it. They actually found no significant discharge rate in actually serious events within a short term 1 week after being discharged compared to those that were actually admitted. So again, you're not hurting patients by having them potentially being admitted to an outpatient facility in this particular subset of patients. And overall, when you do admit patients, it leads to about 1.4-day hospitalization, which potentially could have been avoided. There was a question about unnecessary testing, and this actually shows that syncope patients who actually get evaluated in a syncope unit, the rate of testing goes way down. Unnecessary tests, brain scans, neurology consultation, coronary angiography, head CTs, all these things don't ever help really move the needle forward in a patient that you have are able to take a careful history. Carotid sinus massage and tilt-table testing, I kind of go either way with tilt-table testing. But again, a lot of things that we don't do readily enough are done in the syncope clinic. But again, there's far more unnecessary testing goes on in the hospital that just wastes time and costs money. University of Wisconsin set up a similar clinic, and what we found is that over several years of time, the rate of diagnosis goes up, almost at 91%. Many patients had a loop recorder to help us out with this, and if you walk into the hospital, you can see that patients who may be coming to the heart and vascular care services for other reasons may have, oh, I actually did fall down, maybe I should come back. And actually, we've had very good success. Over the course of time, we started out with about 500 patients or so, and over time, we actually see about 1,000 patients per year. So this is a very prevalent problem, and it actually shows that, you know, patients actually do want to spend more time talking about this. So the question is, now that you've heard about this, and I hope you have some idea what syncope clinics are, you're all very excited to go back home and tell the hospital that you want to set up a syncope clinic because you came here. And they'll say to you, okay, well, what's it going to cost? And you'll say, well, you're not going to be admitting so many patients now, and everyone that's going to get admitted is not going to have the head CT that you wanted to get. So that's going to lose money. And then you're going to say, well, you're losing money, but you're also going to spend more money to hire about 4 nurse practitioners and hire administrators, and I'll need a lot of equipment too. And so they're going to look at you like you're crazy. But at the end of the day, if you think about this, you know, despite the decreased admission and test per diagnosis, hospitals may potentially see an increase in their margins due to, number one, improvement in quality of care, and secondly, they have an associated increase in market share. So this is not going to work for somebody whose hospital is never busting at the gills. You know, if you have a lot of patients in your hospital, as many academic centers do, and you're always looking for a bed, this is a way to actually not admit patients who potentially don't need to be there. You actually have more beds for patients who are sicker. So overall, syncope units, there's no randomized trials that compare this, and so again, there's a lot of barriers to setting this up, but think about this as an option for patients who are low intermediate risk. It all starts with risk stratification and risk assessment. You have a decreased rate of admissions and hospital length of stay. You decrease the utilization of unnecessary tests. Nobody needs a head CT unless there's really signs that they have neurologic trauma. You actually have a potentially increased rate of appropriate diagnosis, and this gets into a little bit of a dicey area because do we ever really know what caused syncope? You have an abnormal echo. Do you really know the aortic stenosis caused it? You have a good idea. So the diagnostic yield, it's a term that requires careful thinking, but again, however you're defining it, the rate of appropriate diagnosis, the most likely diagnosis, appears to go up. Patient satisfaction and quality of life goes up too. Patients actually enjoy telling their story. You don't have a lot of time to spend in the ED or in the hospital to sort of really get at the nature of syncope. It's all in the history, you know. It's all there. The event is unexpected and surprising to patients. They don't want to faint. They don't want to faint again. And so, again, you want to have somebody who could spend the time and sort of think about a standardized protocol to help sort of streamline the testing, potentially reach diagnosis earlier. And finally, if you have a syncope unit and you carefully see patients, you can enter them into the medical record, there's an opportunity to perform research. The diagnosis is never 100%, and so the more patients that we see and evaluate, the better opportunity we have to sort of prevent recurrences and evaluate patients in the future. Thank you very much.
This has been the ACC CardiaCast, your latest education from the American College of Cardiology. Go to acc.org to find this and other additional resources related to today's show.